I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and join multimedia travel journalist Dick Jordan in part two of an engaging conversation where Jordan shares his insights about whether print travel publications are dying, where in today's online information age travelers can find stories that will inspire them to travel to new places, and how to plan a visit to America's often crowded national parks during 2016 as the National Park Service celebrates its 100th year anniversary as guardians of our parks.
This land was made for you and me.
You entered the field of travel journalism in the dying days of print. Everything is different. The whole playing field is, it's a new world. How does somebody today, how do you surgically find out about cool places to go and things to do and see?
Back in the day, what I used to do as a traveler is I would read the Sunday travel section in the newspaper, and I would read magazines that were either devoted exclusively to travel, or like Sunset Magazine, what people in the Western U.S. read, had a vibrant travel section. And if a place sounded interesting to me, I would cut that out or I would photocopy it, and I'd throw it in a folder called Trip Ideas. And then periodically, maybe two or three times a year, I would pull that out and kind of sort them into, yeah, that's a definite thing I want to think about. That's a maybe, and that's a wrong season pile, right? And then I would go through the maybes and say, okay, let me put that in the definitely worth looking at, and then sort through that pile and then talk to my wife, maybe do a little more research. And that's how we would decide where to go. So the stories were inspiring us to go someplace. And in some cases, that inspiration would last for many years. As we were talking earlier today, I said I eventually went to the Alsace region of France probably about 15 or 20 years after I read a compelling story about the region in the San Francisco Chronicle Sunday travel section. But on all my prior trips to Europe, I could never quite get there. It was like too far out of the way. And then finally I went, you know? So I think that's the power of stories.
But today it's a different world.
Well, it is and it isn't. Interestingly enough, as you know, Tom, I was just down at Oxnard at the North American Travel Journalists Association annual conference, and the keynote speaker was Adam Pitluck, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, who's the editor-in-chief of American Way, which is the American Airlines magazine. And he made a pretty compelling argument to the journalists there about how print is not dead and that print is actually a better way to convey information about destinations to people than modern media, which is online, that if you sit there with a print publication and read it, you're more likely to remember stuff and be moved by it. Whereas, particularly if you're reading on a small screen like a smartphone, quick, 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 onto the next story, onto the next story. So print hasn't quite died, although it certainly has shriveled up, as you know, where the newspaper travel sections are either gone or they're very much smaller. So it's an interesting kind of dichotomy. It's like when Amazon invented the Kindle, everybody said, that's the end of print books, goodbye. Well, it's not the end of print books. Print books are alive and well.
Let's dovetail to the modern incarnation. We were talking about TripAdvisor and Yelp and online sources that people go to.
Yeah, so I find it interesting that people would look to those sites for inspiration as to where to go, even if they have some kind of blurb about the place. I can understand people, and I've done this, looking them for information. For example, if I had a print guidebook and was thinking about booking a certain hotel, I would probably go to TripAdvisor and see if there were any reviews, how many of them were there. I would throw out the ones that lauded it and the ones that panned it and see how many were in between. So to use it as a sort of a backup, more recent thing than maybe the print guidebook would help. But it seems to me to be a strange place to go to get an idea about where you would want to go to travel,
right?
Although I know people do it. Maybe I'm just too old school to understand that mentality.
Where is the best place to find out, to be teased and tickled?
Well, I think if you can still get access to print media, print travel media, that's good. Another good place is actually sometimes to look at ads. I never would have gone to Europe except I saw a full-page ad for inexpensive airfares to Europe. I didn't realize that those were the fares that were every year's off-season fears. But what it did is it prompted me to talk to people who had been to Europe and say, well, what about November through March? Is that going to be such a bad time to go that I'll have a terrible time? And they said, listen, if it's raining, go inside. There's stuff to do. Just go. And so even though I had watched, say, Rick Steves' PBS European travel blog programs, I'd never really been motivated to go. And finally, this was the trigger. And so I went, and now I've been four times. So those can help. And I think talking to other people, your friends, somebody tells you about a trip, find out about that and then do a little research.
Before we go, I want you to share with us one of your favorite passions, and that's the national parks. And this is a seminal year in the National Park Service.
So we've had national parks in the United States for well over 100 years, but this year is the centennial of the National Park Service. When Yellowstone was founded, created by Congress, the U.S. Army were the ones who were the park rangers, essentially. And if you go there today, you will see the barracks and information about that. This being the centennial of the national parks, there's going to be an awful lot of people who want to go there. There's an awful lot of people who want to go every year. I have been to, I'm sure, all the major national parks in the West. And when my wife and I were both working hammer and tongs, instead of going to a place like Europe or another big city in the U.S. that was dense and crowded and chaotic, we wanted to escape since we live in an urban environment. And we would go to national parks on all of our vacations. And it's still, those are, I think, the greatest thing. Ken Burns says it's America's best idea. And in the centennial year, at least on our PBS station in the Bay Area, they're going to be rerunning his 2009 multi-part documentary on the national parks. The tough thing, unfortunately for most of us, is there's a lot of acreage, but there's not a lot of sort of access and places to stay. And so sometimes you have to plan way ahead or just have park karma, right? Yay, I landed a room or something like that. The second thing that's a little distressing to me, having been to many of these parks, is the amount of deferred maintenance that's there, and that Congress just doesn't want to seem to pony up the money for I don't know if it's as bad in the national parks as it's been in the California state park system, but it's not a good thing. The lodges and stuff, I think, get maintained because the concessionaires have to make the capital improvements, right? But they have long-term contracts, so they can afford to do that. But things like trails and signage and hiring more interpretive rangers is an issue. So I hope in this centennial year, your listeners will lobby their members of Congress to please spend more money on America's best idea.
One more before we go. Savvy traveler in this year of the centenary, how does somebody beat the system and get a room at Yosemite or, you know, Yellowstone when everybody in America is being hyped about the centenary?
Well, one thing to do is go in 2017, I suppose, or 2018. You know, some of these parks do have often shoulder seasons. Yosemite is open year-round. Yellowstone has some of its facilities open in winter. I've always wanted to go in winter, even though I'm not a kind of a winter kind of a guy. Others like Glacier are pretty much the one season, you know, parks. Another thing to do is instead of going to the most popular ones, think about another one. For example, in California, Kings Canyon and Sequoia, which are not far from Yosemite, see, I think, about a half or a third of the visitation. You might have better luck there. And Lassen Volcanic National Park in northeastern California, which is my absolute favorite national park in the West, only gets about 400,000 visitors a year, about one-tenth of Yosemite.
Part of that is just pure location, isn't it? Geographic, where it's situated, that you're not driving by it. You have to want to go to it.
Yeah, and even though it's close to I-5, and they do get a fair number of day visitors, most of those people kind of do a drive-through. There's a main road to the park. Take a quick look at some stuff. There's a place called Bumpus Hell, which is a mini Yellowstone with geothermal features, and they go to that and then get in the car and they're back on I-5. So once they're gone, it's very quiet. There isn't a lot of lodging inside the park. It's a camper's park, but there are some places nearby. But still, even on kind of short notice, you might be able to get a room there or nearby. And really, that's a beautiful park. Yeah, it's absolutely on my top list of recommendations.
One more, Dick Jordan, best kept secret, under the radar national park site.
How about Oregon Caves? So Oregon Caves is kind of a very miniature Carlsbad Caverns. And it's located in southern Oregon. Most people are headed to Crater Lake, or they're going up I-5 and headed maybe into the Cascades or someplace. But if you turn back towards California and go a short distance, you'll get to Oregon Caves. You want to go at the end of the afternoon when all the day trippers are tripping out. And then you won't have to wait too long in line to take a tour. And better yet, what you should do is before you arrive is book a room in a chalet there and then stay overnight, at least one night. There's some day hiking in there. And then get back in your car. And you will have gone to a place that very, very few national park visitors even know about, let alone have visited. It's really kind of fascinating.
This land was made for you and me.
You've been listening to multimedia journalist Dick Jordan.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. To learn more about Dick Jordan and his prolific endeavors, log on to talestoldfromtheroad.com.
As the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning.
I was strolling, the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, voice coming chanting, and the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me.